Good afternoon. Welcome to the January 9th, 2019 Planning Commission hearing. Please rise and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's usually over there.
Sorry. Things got moved and I didn't realize it. I apologize. It's the new year, so. First, let's take roll call. Commissioner Quad?
Here.
Commissioner Bartlett?
Here.
Commissioner Rice?
Here.
Commissioner Irons?
Here.
I'm Joe Ha, Commissioner Ha. We're here. I believe we have a minute from the December 12th, I guess, that we need to approve. Has everyone got a chance to review the minutes?
Yes.
I'll make a motion for approval.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Minutes approved. Executive Officer, if that's okay, we'd like to move item number three, right, up for the election of the Planning Commission, new officers. So is that time of the year where we nominate a new chairman and vice chairman? Do I have a nomination from somebody, please?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to nominate Mr. Kevin Rice for chair.
Do we have a second on that?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Congratulations, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I guess before I turn the gavel over to you, we can do the same nomination for the vice chair.
I would like to nominate Commissioner Kwok to be vice chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Congratulations, vice chair. With that, I'll turn the gavel over to you, Mr. Chair, and I'll have you take it over from here.
Thank you. Thank you. And with that, we'll go down to the next discussion items. We'll go back up to item number one. Daldi, could you introduce that for us?
Yes, we do have county planning staff here to introduce the item. With the presentation, it's a public hearing for the Zoning Code Amendment 18-01. It has to deal with floodplain regulations. Ms. Chang?
Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Joanna Chang, Land Use Manager at OC Public Works. We are before you today to present the proposed Zoning Code Amendment for the floodplain district regulations. The second item will be related to the proposed Zoning Code Update. Also in attendance today is Project Manager Penny Liu from OC Infrastructure and JT Yen, Civil Engineering and Building and Safety. They will be here to respond to any follow-up questions. The County of Orange participates in the National Flood Insurance Program, which is administered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and implemented locally by the California Department of Water Resources. As a participating community, the county is mandated to adopt and enforce ordinance to reduce the risk of funding and meet or exceed federal requirements. In return, FEMA makes flood insurance available to property owners throughout the unincorporated area. The county's last floodplain update to the zoning code was in November 2009. More recently, FEMA changed its method of reviewing local floodplain ordinances. FEMA now requires local jurisdictions to comply with the California State Model Ordinance and review checklists to meet National Flood Insurance Program requirements. Following FEMA's most recent review of the county's floodplain district regulations, OC Infrastructure received a letter from FEMA indicating that the county must make revisions to the floodplain district regulations. The deadline is March 21st, 2019. The letter is referenced as Attachment 2 of the staff report. The revisions being requested by FEMA are minor in nature. Proposed zoning code amendment CA-1801 will address these minor revisions by providing language on the definition of recreational vehicle, language on severability provisions, a requirement that proposed developments shall locate and construct public utilities and water systems to minimize flood damage, and clarification that a California registered professional engineer or architect certified development projects. Another item that was inadvertently omitted in the staff report is clarification that floodproofing methods will be determined by the project type and based on applicable regulations. All of the proposed language is referenced in Attachment 3 of the staff report. The language has been reviewed and also approved by FEMA. Communities that fail to enact the necessary floodplain management regulations will be suspended from participation in the NFIP. In summary, staff is recommending Planning Commission receive the staff report, open a public hearing to receive public testimony, and adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 1801, which will find Zoning Code Amendment CA-1801 categorically exempt, and recommend the Board of Supervisors also find that Zoning Code Amendment CA-1801 be categorically exempt and adopt proposed Zoning Code Amendment CA-1801 regarding floodplain district regulations. This concludes our presentation. Please let us know if there are any questions.
Any questions from the commissioners?
I don't have any.
None. Just a quick question, please. This seems like it's just a clarification and a formality of cleaning up the language, and it's just to be consistent with what FEMA is requiring today, right?
Correct. Correct. Minor revisions, we're all already doing these things.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from the commissioners? And we do have to open up a public hearing, is that what I heard?
Yes.
And do we have speaker, I would call them cards, sheets, green sheets available? Anyone wishing to speak today, if you could fill that out. And with that, we'll open up the hearing.
There are no speakers for item number one. Both sheets are for the second item.
Okay. Make sure nobody's here to speak on item number one. No? Hearing nothing, we'll close the hearing. And with that, we should be ready for motion.
I'll take a swing at it. All right. I'd like to make a motion that we receive the staff report and public testimony and adopt the Planning Commission Resolution Number 18-01 as stated, and additionally recommend the Board of Supervisors find that the Zoning Code Amendment CA-1801 is categorically exempt as stated, and adopt the proposed Zoning Code Amendment California 1801 regarding floodplain district regulations as stated.
All right, do we have a second?
Yes, okay, I'll second that.
All right, then motion made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Passes unanimously. All right. We move on to the next item, number two. Mr. Cataldi.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Item number two is a community workshop for the Zoning Code Amendment 16-01. This is our orange is a new green project that has been before you a number of times in 2018. And we do have county planning staff here prepared to make a presentation.
All right, they can proceed when they're ready.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. We are before you today with an additional community workshop regarding the proposed update to the county zoning code. Please feel free to stop us at any time with any questions you may have. Sorry. During today's presentation, we will provide an update on zoning code activities since our last community meeting, which was held in September 2018, along with information regarding proposed revisions that have recently been added to the zoning code update regarding the county's Planning Commission term of office and planned development district regulations. The second draft of the zoning code update was released for public review and comment on October 30th, 2018. The comment period for the second draft ended on November 30th, 2018. A compilation of the comments and questions received, both during the first draft comment period and also for the second draft, are available on the project webpage. We continue to accept comments and questions through the project webpage. The CEQA document for the project, an initial study and negative declaration, was released for review and comment on December 4th, 2018. The comment period for this document ended on December 24th, 2018. As of today, no comments have been received. Staff also wanted to remind your commission that OC Development Services Neighborhood Preservation has initiated an update to the county's codified ordinances regarding property maintenance, nuisances, noise control, and violations. These sections of the codified ordinances are outside of the county zoning code and are enforced by the county's neighborhood preservation section. These proposed revisions are available on the zoning code update webpage and will be presented to the Planning Commission at the same public hearing as the final draft of the zoning code update. Which are wrong, Planning Division Manager can answer any questions regarding this update you may have. In Article 1, Decision-Making Bodies, staff is proposing to add language that would clarify that a Planning Commission member's term is concurrent with that of their appointing supervisor, so it could be for a term of 4 or 8 years. All members would continue to serve at the discretion of the Board of Supervisors and could have their membership terminated at any point during the Planning Commission member's term of office. An additional new revision that is being proposed by staff is to revise the plan development combining district regulations to better describe the intent of this district and to ensure the provision of certain infrastructure. The most substantive revisions proposed includes new language in the purpose and intent section to better describe that the goal of this district is to provide flexibility in the underlying district regulations and to encourage the use of new and innovative site planning techniques. The definition of planned development will also be revised to allow this type of development in the form of apartments, condominiums, and stock cooperatives. The revised language also reminds interested developers the quality of life enjoyed by future residents and compatibility with the surrounding neighborhood are of utmost importance in any proposed development using the planned development district regulations. Currently, residential projects utilizing planned development district regulations shall not exceed the maximum density of the underlying zoning district. However, in an effort to facilitate the development of much-needed affordable housing units, new language would allow residential projects to request an increase in density in exchange for the provision of affordable housing units within the development. Past experience has led staff to conclude the PD development regulations should include specific requirements regarding infrastructure found in typical residential development. These improvements are intended to both ensure the safety of future residents and that the development is compatible with other residential projects in the neighborhood. This includes the provision of common and private open space, sidewalks within the development along private roads, and walls around the entire development. Today's workshop is just to provide information to your commission, also to receive any public testimony, and to also receive any feedback from the commission to staff as appropriate. Staff is recommending your commission to receive public testimony and provide feedback to staff. That concludes our presentation. We are available to answer any questions you may have.
All right, questions by commissioners? No, I did have a question on the, to make sure that I understand, on the section 7948, this is planned development combining district. You mentioned sidewalks within developments along private roads. What does that mean? Does that mean it's sidewalks are required, and is this only in, I think the language probably speaks for itself, within planned communities, or what does that cover?
It's not a planned community, Chairman. It is a planned unit development. Many local jurisdictions can call them small lot developments. Our most recent development was in the West Anaheim, the Cerritos project, which I think was around 20 units, roughly 20 units.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took two existing lots, did a zone change, and had PD apply to it. And they were able to make the lot smaller, and but look like a smaller residential development. So like other residential developments, there are sidewalks along streets in order to provide a safe pedestrian path along a road in a street inside the development. So it's not a planned community, it's a planned unit development, which is an existing use and has been used several times throughout the unincorporated area.
Okay, well, I think probably I may be one of the only people in the room that doesn't understand this. And so I'll probably ask more questions later. So this is a, when you say they choose to use the PD as opposed to, well, for instance, in where I live, in my area of the world, we have a lot of developments and we don't have sidewalks, and we don't necessarily want sidewalks. Is this a requirement that everybody has to have a sidewalk, or how does that work?
The language is that they're required to have a sidewalk unless they have a waiver that is made by during their approval of the use permit. And maybe Richard could provide additional information.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Richard Vong, Land Development Manager. So basically, a planned unit development, it doesn't increase your units, it doesn't increase your density, it just allows you to reconfigure the amount of lots you already have. So if you have 10 lots, you can still have 10 lots. It just looks different. So you can either, based on hillsides and stuff, you can either push them closer and cluster it and still have the same amount of land. You just move the lots closer, so it allows a lot more flexibility of the units. And also, for certain developments, we do want it to be contiguous with sidewalks, if it has sidewalks, but they could also request for the waiver to get out of it. So if you're in a more of a rural area, you could request to get no sidewalks. So that's always a possibility that we'll consider. But for the project in Anaheim, where every project had sidewalks, we wanted them to have sidewalks. So before our previous language, it never required any review of infrastructure. So now we want to have something there where we can make sure that developers meet what the community, consistent community characteristics if we need to, or they could get out of it too. So.
Okay, thank you.
And to be clear, Chair Rice, I believe that this only applies, because your question was about your neighborhood, I know where you live. This only applies if you're in a PD district and if you request to have that PD applied to your property. So really the answer to your question is no, this does not require sidewalks everywhere.
Okay, but right, only if you if you choose to apply the PD.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Any other questions?
Sure. Question 79-48.3 says, in the PD district, the following principal uses are permitted subject to approval of a use permit. So you're required to get a use permit even with uses, principal uses that are permitted. Can you clarify that?
Yes, correct. So say you have an R1 zone, the principal use is a single family use.
Right.
But if you want to apply a PD, it allows you to move around those single family uses. So if you want to cluster your uses, it's not just a standard single family. So that's why we require a use permit, so we can review and have some discretion over what that product looks like.
Perfect.
If you want to move stuff around, this is kind of the route to go through.
Perfect. Second question is on page 3 of 3, when you talk about building coverage is different than floor area. So it's the amount of area the building actually covers on the ground. Is that correct? Is that what you're referring to there?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And then back to the chair's question on the sidewalks. It says planned development shall provide accessible sidewalks adjacent to each private road. So is that meant to be prescriptive, that it has to be adjacent to? Can there be a parkway? Can it be on one side of the street? What does that exactly mean?
Yes, we wanted to follow the street for access-wise, but it does allow flexibility. So a developer can always ask to get out of it or have a different route to go through. So that's one of the good things about having a use permit is it's a little more discretion for the planning commission and for staff to ask, or for the applicants ask to, for some deviations on that. But at a minimum, if they're not asking for anything, we want the sidewalk to kind of follow the street.
And then final question is, if you do provide affordable housing, what kind of density bonus do you, is it the regular state density bonus on that?
So the base starts at the state level. I think as part of our overall zoning code update, we are increasing some of the densities. And it's in a different section of the zoning code. So we might have more info on that. But we are adding a little more density to each of the categories. So
that's part of the zoning code update.
Correct. So right. The state would be the base, and then we're adding more on top.
Yes.
That concludes my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I don't have any.
No? None for me. No? I believe we were covering the expiration of the supervisor's term of office, and I had had a question for county council on to clarify that, to make sure that it means what it appears to mean. And so if you could address that.
Yes. So the added language says that the term automatically terminates upon expiration of the supervisor's term of office. And the supervisor's term of office, as we all know, is 4 years. And so that would be a natural expiration of that. What this does not include is if a supervisor resigns or there is a death or a vacancy for another reason. In that situation, the planning commissioner would remain until we can have a special election, which we will be having one soon, to replace that supervisor. And then that supervisor would be able to retain the person who is sitting or appoint or whatever that person wants. We don't want a vacancy for a long period of time, as sometimes special elections, you know, they're not right away. So we could go months without a vacancy. The reason that we're clarifying this is because right now, the first sentence with this generally coincides, generally doesn't mean anything, as any good lawyer would tell you. So we're just attempting to clarify this and make it consistent with the rules that our other boards and commissions have for the county, our public boards and commissions. And this is consistent with that state. This statement is consistent with boards and commissions across the county.
Okay. So it covers the full term as they were originally elected or appointed to?
Yes.
Okay.
Does the full language of it put in the detail you did? That it
no, this include? Is the full language.
Because it's still not really
clear.
Clear.
So that's what... You know, if there are revisions that you think would make it clearer, we are willing to take those in. And Ms. Maldonado and I discussed this after we received a question about it. I went back to my office. This is the language that is generally used, even if it's not clear, but we can change it. It's fine. Something that was suggested to me was that the term of a planning commissioner is coterminous, which essentially means the same thing. To the term of the board member. But when I mentioned that to Commissioner Rice, that could also maybe imply that upon the vacating for any reason of that supervisor, that the planning commissioner's term expires. So the way it is they do have specific terms of office. This seems to be more clear to me than the coterminous language.
I was just thinking the way you explained it was really clear, other than death and, you know,
maybe what we could do is I will listen to myself again, and we can add some language to the sentence. I was perhaps more articulate than I can be a second time around.
Commissioner Irons, could you be more specific on what is ambiguous about the language?
Oh, sure. Being that I feel like this one should be named after me. Because I asked the question, when do I leave?
And then it automatically comes
back.
And
it amazes me that it never came up before.
Yes, and when I asked my office about it, I just think that people were assuming on the boards and commissions of the county that they continued to sit until they were removed.
Okay.
So when the language wasn't specific enough. And some boards and commissions had more specific language than we did.
Yeah, so to answer the question, I felt like if we were going to make it more clear, right now it's coterminous or what is
no.
it?
No, right.
Right now it's generally
mm-hmm. yeah.
serves the same term. So I was just thinking you put in there that until the same term unless there's a left office for
unless
reasons such
as vacancy is not because of the natural termination.
Right. I mean including but not limited to the death or disability or resignation. And there's probably a better way to put it to do with leaving before the term is up, that you stay until the next person appoints you.
We are proposing to eliminate to delete the word generally so that it would specifically say the term of each member coincides with the term of the office of the supervisor from the district in mm-hmm. which the member resides.
And then the term automatically terminates upon expiration of the supervisor's term of office. That seems pretty clear to me.
Yes, Commissioner.
Yeah. Other than if the supervisor leaves prior to the expiration of their term. Because that's what they don't want to do is create a long vacancy. If someone was to resign.
I guess the...
Just leave them in there.
What we're hearing, though, is that this is... It might be clearer how it's stated than if I start writing unlesses.
All right. We'll get it clear.
That's,
I have a comment here, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
I think what we're trying to avoid here is what happened when we ended last year, where Commissioner Irons, if you don't mind, even Commissioner Rice said, hey, what happened? Do we come back? This time, and that's the unknowns or the not known exactly what's going to happen is what we're trying to get clarification on. But my question is, who ultimately decide what modification, revision, or clarification we need to add to this? Is this?
This will go to the board.
It goes to the board.
Just as the rest of the zoning code.
But does the commission have any say in as far as recommending certain revisions?
Of course,
we do, right? Just
yes.
like always. Right?
Yes.
What I'd like to add too is based on my 3-4 years sitting on the Planning Commission here is, on the other side of it, when the Board of Supervisors, and that's not my say, but decide to remove one of us, and that's up to them, as long as they have the majority votes. But as professional in the industry and as an official of the county, we deserve to know ahead of time. I hate, and I've seen it where a commissioner would come to the planning hearing and say, am I supposed to be here? Because there may be a new person. Something to that effect. I don't know how we do it. But again, it's very unpleasant not knowing what's going to happen to you. Now, this is an appointed position. We do it really for no pay. We do it because we want to serve the county. But I think we deserve that professional treatment instead of being surprised by the board of supervisors, whoever, they say, oh, you know what? We don't like the commissioner because what he did X, Y, Z. I'm just stating an example. I think that courtesy needs to be extended to us. And that's just my comments, Mr. Chairman. You can add or...
I'm just not sure how you do that. If they remove
I'm not sure how you do it either, but I want to throw it out there because I've seen it. It hasn't happened to me. But for example, the first day I come to the Planning Commission, there was no workshop. There's no handbook to say, okay, here's how you conduct yourself, even sitting here in front of the public, right? What do you do when you open for? I think there has to be some kind of guideline.
Maybe you're talking about two different things.
I am, but
okay,
it's
so
related.
Like,
that's why
notice from the board about their decision on a planning commissioner. I mean, you would have access to the 72-hour board postings that we have, and so. But what usually happens is the board member should tell you this is at their discretion. I don't know that you could propose something. I don't know that the board would then approve something that would limit their ability to remove a planning commissioner by some sort of notice provision, or I'm not exactly
right.
Sure.
And I'm not asking like, we reduce or we eliminate their authority because we don't have the power to do that. But I'm just saying courtesy treatment. Now, like I said, it hasn't happened to me. I've been treated very well professionally, but I've seen other member of the planning commission in the past that I didn't think it was done correctly, right or wrong. That's just my opinion. I just want to throw it out there. I think it will help all of us.
I think that was a very unusual situation where you...
And you know what I'm talking about.
We should know because it's on the agenda. And I would guess most of our supervisors would tell us, I'm going to remove you. I don't know that we can legislate the oddity, and in fact, it kind of brings up this thing that we're talking about with this language. Are we making things worse with it terminating with the supervisor? I know if I was elected supervisor, I don't really want all my commissions vacated. So now I got nobody. I mean, I'd almost rather watch the person who's there and see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately this will go to the board. So they'll see this revision, and if they don't like it, they can remove it. We have one new board member and we're going to have a second here eventually. So how they will vote on that, I can't say.
Well, just maybe bring up the law of unintended consequences.
Right.
That if we have two board members expire, you're going to have vacancies everywhere. You may not get quorums. It might shut down the county operations. So it would probably be better to leave us in place until the person's ready to put a new person in place.
And just, again, I think we're just going to let them decide that.
Okay.
Now, each one of us do have the rights to talk to our own supervisor, and I'm planning on doing that just to share my opinion. I think we can do that. So if it's an issue that's important to each one of you or some of you, then you can bring that up, right? So I do have that open communication with my supervisor, my district. But as a whole, I think we done a pretty good job trying to do what we can to serve the county.
We're supposed to give them language
that
we recommend. And in my opinion, and it's not to keep me here because I don't know, but my opinion, it should be the other way around, is that we serve until we're told we don't serve, so that if the new supervisor comes in, they don't have to on day one grab someone because... Mm-hmm. They don't know who they are.
Right. I'm talking for current and mainly future supervisor. I mean, the commissioner, basically on what I see that took place in the past. I mean, we all know that we gain experience from going through it and then make suggestions to better what we do here as the planning commission, right?
So. Yeah. The way that you just described it, Commissioner Irons, is a very common way that counties handle it when there's not term limits. If the supervisor passes or... just doesn't get reelected, the commissioner, it's common for commissioner to stay in the seat until the newly elected comes in and then makes the change if they were to do so, or they hold over the person and maintain that appointment. The part when I was looking into this for the Orange County's case here, the unique thing is that since there's term limits, it kind of throws that kind of common practice out the window a little bit. So what would be a common practice in a term limit place would be appoint the commissioner. They run the 4 years or the 8 years, assuming the board member gets reelected. And then if there's a death of a supervisor, they remain during that term, finishing off the term, unless a newly appointed board member came in and then they made that decision any time, right, within the term, they can do that. Or if they didn't pass and they just went for an election to another seat, but you're still in that midterm type of thing, like a Supervisor Spitzer in this case, you still finish the term until another member comes in and unseats you or does something different. But in no event would you go beyond the 8 years or the 4 years. So there's a clean, defined break, but if there's any interim moves, you stay the full term. And that would be more of a term limit.
So it's kind of making us subject to term limits is what you're really doing.
Yes.
We've always been subject to term limits.
But then are we can we be reappointed or do we have term limits?
Yes, you can. This is just, if you read it with the first sentence, right? This is just clarifying what happens when the term of the Office of Supervisor from which you reside ends, right? Because it's a qualifier to the first sentence, because the situation we've recently found ourselves in was, oh, what do we do with only this sentence and the word generally in it? And I gave you advice on this. We have two people sitting here based on that advice.
But it actually works to our favor, though, because we keep a quorum and we...
Yes, you know, no, it does.
Things and moving forward. So.
I agree. Yeah. I agree with Colby in that, you know, we do have term limits here, and that it becomes very cumbersome. Part of this discussion was we have been asked by Supervisor Doe to have consistency with our commissions and boards and all of their rules and regulations. Your rules and regulations happen to be in an ordinance. Most of them are not. Part of that is kind of making them consistent, and the language that we added makes them consistent with these others, and that is recognizing that a new supervisor may in fact want that clean slate for all of their boards and commissions, and that it may be difficult to right now to even figure out which ones are automatically terminated and which ones aren't, to for the clerk of the board to tell the supervisor who they can and can't appoint. So we're trying to bring some consistency to that, just as some background.
All right.
Okay. So, well, we do have a public hearing that we need, but I'm not sure where that leaves us if we're really going to be prepared to have a vote on this section, or whether our motion will be able to, County Council, if we're not...
Today,
the Planning
not
Commission
being
may
asked.
Not. We don't have to vote on this.
Yeah, no, we're not voting today.
Not today. So all of your input can be given to us today. When this comes back for a vote, you can refuse to adopt this particular language if you wish. You can exempt it from whatever motion that you make with regards to the zoning code update. But for today, it's just the discussion.
Very good.
And we have a pretty good one.
Okay, very good. And I guess with that, then we're ready to open up the hearing on the public hearing on the rest of that. And so we'll do that. Mr. Cataldi, we have some speakers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We do have two speakers. First speaker, Mr. Rick Nelson, and the second speaker, Mr. Roger Sprick.
Hello, good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Richard Nelson, president of the Foothill Communities Association. We several months back sent in comments about the proposed zoning change, but only very recently learned about this change in the RV regulation. And the Foothill Communities Association is opposed to the change in wording. As a short bit of history, if you go back a few years, there weren't a lot of RVs parked in driveways in our community, but more recently, the last couple years, there's an increasing incidence, and people in our community, or at least the ones that have contacted me, object to that and would like to see that curtailed. And the change in the zoning code would allow that. People can, as I understood it, park anywhere on the driveway with the new rules. And I think that would be deleterious to the appearance of our community. There are a number of people who have abided by the regulations and even gone beyond. If you drive around in North Tustin, you'll see that there are a number of garages that are tall. People park their RVs. You know, that may be beyond what people really need to do because it costs money, but I certainly appreciate it. I see people who have a tall garage right next to the road, so that certainly provides good screening. Other people park in back of the setback on the driveway, but put screening in front of it, like a gate. And so we think that's a very good solution, and we'd like to see that kind of language. We've checked with the neighboring cities, and both Orange and the city of Tustin do not allow parking of RVs on driveways or in the street, except for a short period of time for loading and unloading, like a 24-hour period. So we think that would be a good solution, too. Well, I like that a lot. That would certainly put us in concert with our neighboring with the neighboring cities. I appreciated the discussion initiated by Commissioner Rice about sidewalks. We hadn't really thought about that before, and I wound up not really understanding the specific issue that concerns me is that we have a lot of streets in North Tustin that do not have sidewalks, and people have actually fought to keep it that way. A number of times the county has wanted to upgrade and add sidewalks, and people opposed it and didn't get the sidewalks. We also have a number of large properties that could be subject in the future to infill. And so if those were infilled, I'm wondering about the sidewalks on the neighboring street, whether that now would mandate a sidewalk. So we'd prefer not to see that. And it's unclear to me whether the change in the zoning would mandate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Ms. Cataldi? Yeah.
Mr. Rogers-Sprigg?
Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me to speak. I apologize. I didn't exactly understand this. It was going to be a formal meeting, so I wasn't totally prepared as I would have been. But I am here. I'm a 29-year resident in my current home, 39 total in North Tustin. And I am here because I oppose the zoning, the new language proposed for the RVs, just as Mr. Nelson just said. And for me, this little history might help you understand why I'm here. And I would have done a PowerPoint or whatever. That's a photograph of a house about three homes from mine, two motorhomes, two huge motorhomes in the front driveway. And they've been there for about 3 to 5 years. They've never moved. And I put up with it for a time. And then I began to realize that other neighbors were bringing in motorhomes and boats and whatever. I have 11 more pictures here of boats and trailers and whatever all in my my block. In February of last year, I started discussing this with code enforcement, and we went back and forth for about 9 months, 10 months, and I finally met with code enforcement and county council in October. And by the way, I'm a retired attorney, so I look at the ordinances, and we discussed the particular language of the current ordinance, and I believe it prohibits RVs and boats and things like that. County council took the opposite position, but agreed that the language was unclear, ambiguous. And so this, the resolution or solution was to add this new amendment to the nuisance ordinance, which says that to make it clear, absolutely crystal clear, that RVs can be parked in driveways. Under the current language, these two motorhomes would be legal. I believe that the language is, there should be a consideration of the number of motorhomes. If motorhomes are going to be permitted in driveways, there should be consideration to the number of motorhomes, the size, and the distance from parking from the street. I should also add that, as Mr. Nelson just mentioned, we're surrounded by Tustin, Orange, a little bit of Santa Ana, and Villa Park is kind of off in the distance. The character of North Tustin, where we live, is very similar to Tustin, Orange, and Villa Park, and so on. All three of those cities have ordinances that say no motorhomes, no way, not going to happen. So if this ordinance gets amended, this new language gets put in, we're going to be very different from the neighbors that are right around us. We're going to be treated very differently from the people that are right around us. More importantly, right now we don't have a representative. Supervisor Spitzer has, of course, gone on. And so we don't have anybody we can talk to. And I really, I mean, other than you, excuse me, but a representative. And didn't mean it quite like that. But I think this is something that the new supervisor should pay attention to, should be informed of, and have an interest in talking about it. And so I would propose, that I would say at minimum, this should be pushed off until after the supervisor is, a new supervisor is elected. I would also like some guidance, maybe, or maybe some suggestions as to how I can present more information to you that would be helpful.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for bringing to our attention the issue of the RV. When I first initial read through the new ordinance, that caught my attention as well.
Right.
And if you were considering presenting to the Board of Supervisors, just bring that picture.
Okay.
You have, in my experience, having an RV park in the neighborhood, it obstructs the view. It actually, if someone wants to commit a crime, they can walk through and hide between the RV. And then, if some of the RVs gets parked there and they don't take out their gas containers, so it's a fire hazard too. So with the neighborhood. So if it was me, I would have wanted to make North Tustin similar to the surrounding area, and not allow RVs parked in the residential area. But that's just me.
Okay. If I could add one more thing, briefly. one thing I've noticed, excuse me, is a significant increase just in the number of cars. Maybe it's because they're not parking their cars in the garages. But I think it's kind of just, it feeds on itself. Motorhomes, boats, trailers, more cars. All right. And I think that adds to the problem of crime as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, a question for Colby. What's the current regulations parking in the county streets for RVs? Is it allowed?
That's a good question.
Yeah, our county code considers RVs vehicles. So wherever a vehicle could park, right now an RV could park. You can't just leave it in the street, because after 72 hours, I believe they could tow you.
Right.
There's a 72-hour limit?
It's considered abandoned after a certain number of hours. So you have to move your car on the street. You can't leave it there forever.
A lot of areas have no overnight parking, too, don't they?
A lot of cities do. County code, it's not in the zoning code, so I have to double-check, but I don't believe we have no overnight parking for RVs.
Okay.
I'm sensitive to the to Richard's and Roger's concerns regarding that. It does create parking issues if the driveways aren't being utilized properly as they were intended to be used. And it's something that we're going to have to carefully evaluate when it comes before us. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Well, do we have any other comments by the public?
No, there are no more speakers.
All right. Then we'll close the public hearing. Thank you. But I would say, though, a couple things on that. One, I'm concerned because, first of all, in my mind, it's okay if North Tustin is different, as cities are different. Irvine is different from Tustin. And North Tustin, it depending upon what area of North Tustin you're talking about, I spoke to staff about this, what North Tustin is to one person may not be North Tustin to another person. Does it include the hills? Does it not include the hills? And it may be a mystery as to why part of the North Tustin area that we're talking about, which perhaps looks more like a traditional neighborhood, why does that remain unincorporated? I don't know. Not a question for us, but maybe it's something that that neighborhood has changed in character, and maybe they should be moving towards incorporation. I do have a concern, and that is that in the area we have it's possible to have lots of different sizes. So I have a concern that if you've got somebody who has, let's say they've got a 300 foot deep lot, and their garage is almost maybe 200 feet from the street, and they've got that unusually large driveway. I've got a pretty large driveway, I'd be wary of saying you can't park an RV in that situation. I understand a concern where you might have where the RV is taking up the entire driveway, and then, like you said, it's impacting parking and things like that because the driveway is not being used as maybe we thought of traditionally.
I think somebody mentioned something earlier about the setback. And, you know, every neighborhood has a setback.
Yeah.
And if we just made the RV have to be behind the setback, I mean, RVs, a 10, 12-foot tall RV is like a building.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you could park it beyond 25 or 35 feet away from the property line, wherever the setback is, it would seem like that would probably be an easy solution.
Well, I'd like to hear about that. Yeah,
that's what I wanted to add a comment on. I'm not sure we can do it, but I think, RVs are like homes, right? I mean, portable homes, mobile homes, whatever it is. So I think we can add some kind of setback because there are lots that can accommodate, in my opinion, RVs. I can tell you my personal experience. My next-door neighbor, who I've known for 25 years, bought a new RV. They happen to be on the end of the cul-de-sac, so they don't have any frontage, and their driveways are so short, that they can't park. So what happened was they park in front of my house, it blocks my whole entire house. Now, they was, obviously they don't know because they don't see the effect of it. So once I asked them, they basically said, okay, we'll move it. And the city allows 24 hours parking overnight for charging of the batteries units or whatever not. But there is a requirement where I live where, hey, unless you have a long enough driveway to meet a certain, like, 15, 20-feet setback, you can't have an RV. The other thing I like to add, when you one of your pictures show two RVs, right, on one driveway, my concern about it, and maybe it is the case, maybe it's not the case, I have seen some neighbors in my house where they have big lots and big driveway where they actually rent their driveway for an RV parking to make extra income. Now, it's very unusual, in my opinion. I don't have an RV, but for one family to have two RVs, it's kind of unusual. You buy a bigger one or a smaller one to fit your lifestyle. So that's something we can look into. Maybe we can put some limitation, minimum setback, and hey, you cannot have more than one RV unless they're. I don't know. It's something that I want to throw out and to see what staff can come up with to come back with us. But I do hear the concern of the public. I think it is legitimate concerns.
Hey, Commissioner, I have some info. So right now the code does not allow anyone to park in the front setback unless you're on a driveway that leads to a garage. So we already have that restriction. You can't be in the front unless you're on a driveway that leads to a garage. We do allow you to park behind the front setback as long as it's screened. So that's typically in the backyard or the side yard with a fence in front of it. So the code right now, the issue is just the driveway that leads to the garage in the front setback.
Remove that exemption.
So that's one of the options. So we could remove that exemption. The only change we're doing now from before is just adding another word to it. But that is an option we could consider, is remove that.
I would love to add, okay, yes, you can park on your garage leading to on your driveway leading to the garage, but you still, from the back or the front of the RV, it depends how you look at it, there's still going to be 15, 20 feet setback from the street frontage, right? If you have a long driveway, no problem. So myself, I got a 25-foot-long, 30-foot-long driveway, so that's the possibility, but most RVs are how long? I don't have RVs, so I don't know, but they're like 20, 30 feet?
30 feet.
Right? Yeah, 30. So if you have even a 30-foot driveway, that's it. The back or the front of your RV, depends on how you park it, you're right there facing the street. I don't think that's, I mean, some people even block the sidewalk. I know that's illegal, but I think that's a safety factor too. You know what I mean? For kids walking on the sidewalk getting to where they need to go. Like I said, I think it's a legitimate concern. We need to look into it and see how we can help. But to set some regulation to RV parking.
No, those are good points. I think, we don't allow the RVs across the property line. So anything in the right of way, it can't cross. So that's one way to keep it out of the sidewalks. If it does cross, you call code enforcement. The other things to consider is this is a countywide unincorporated area. So we do have a lot of different jurisdictions. So we can look into different ways how to carve this out. Because there are unique communities that have RVs that fit, such as the canyons. They have a lot of RVs out there.
They would comply because they'd be beyond the setback.
Yeah, but we do see a lot of them in the front driveways too up there because there's in the middle of the forest.
Give them a ticket.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, so we'll consider the different options. We can come back with a few options.
And again, I like to see we can put some limitation on the number of RVs. One being for me because what if there is a resident that has a big, wide, long driveway and they decide to rent that space for someone else or just decide to put four or five RVs. What happened to that? I think that's an eyesore. I mean, for me, in general, right? I mean, there has to be some kind of conformities to.
So just for on the front setback, right? If they have the RVs.
Yeah, if you have, you know, some property have RV parking to the side, in the back somewhere, hey, more power to them. And usually there's a big gate that they can open up and that's hidden behind the gate. That's okay. In my opinion, again, I don't have, you know, we can.
Maybe, yeah, but I'm not sure. Sometimes I'm not sure then what the difference is if you're talking about what's the problem. What are you trying to cure here? If it's because, well, we don't like looking at RVs, if it's on the side of the garage, it probably isn't looking a whole lot different from something that's, you know, a few feet away. Or if it's not in front of the garage, it's on the side, but it has to be on a driveway. Right now, if somebody puts in what you just said, Mr. Wong, if somebody just lays some gravel or some concrete or whatever and drives like I could on the side of my garage, is that not legal to put a vehicle?
It would have to be
somewhere
outside the front setback. So,
okay.
So a typical R1, it would be 20 feet behind
okay.
the property line. It has to be legal. Screened by a wall.
Okay.
So it would be behind the garage, basically on the side, and with a wall in front of it, or gate or fence.
So you have to have a wall or a gate or something like that if it's just on the side.
Yeah. So the exemption that allows you to park on the side, it requires an opaque screening that's 6 feet tall. So a garage could be used as one side of the screening, and then you have to have a fence on the other side.
Yeah. My neighbor's got a boat and an RV. I don't want to cause problems with my neighbor. So
what?
You know, we could handle the multiple RV easily by saying it has to be the homeowner has to be the registered owner. That way you don't get five RVs from one person probably. And you're not taking away their property rights if they want to have five RVs.
Yeah, that's my concern is that Mr. Vong said is that where this would go in the scheme of things is that it covers everywhere in the county. And so you're perhaps trying to solve a problem in certain neighborhoods that look, as I said, kind of more like traditional neighborhoods, house, driveway, street. Mm-hmm. But then maybe, as Commissioner Irons just used the phrase, somebody maybe on my street or another street over or up in the hills where things are a little different, a little crazy, whatever, because that's, you know, I tell people, on my street, I think we're probably all crazy. We just all think we're the normal one. You know, you have to be a little crazy maybe to live up in the hills. and that's us. So I'm concerned that because of how you mentioned we'd have to carve this out, because I don't want to solve a problem in one area and take away property rights from somebody else when their expectation is, you know, I've got a 100-foot driveway, I should be able to do this here, and I've got a boat, I've got an RV, maybe we've got an aging population as well, people retiring, et cetera, and we don't want to, anyway, a lot of different concerns.
One of my concerns would be if we allow RV parking in the driveway, that it has the potential to restrict access to the garage. And then the garage isn't being used for its intended purpose either, and that it could exacerbate further parking problems in the community. So that would be a concern of mine. Second would be, I think what some of the speakers were probably referring to without stating it specifically, but these, and we've all seen it, is the RVs get parked out in the driveway or wherever they're parked, and they're not regularly maintained, they're not regularly washed, and it becomes an eyesore in the community, and it has a detrimental effect to property values. And so I think where I'm coming from at this point is RVs in the driveway, probably would be okay for a limited period of time, but for a permanent period of time, they shouldn't be blocking access to the garage or shouldn't be blocking the intended use of the driveway. For an extended period of time. This is my opinion.
All right, thank you.
So just real quick on that, we do have a code that requires that they're all operational and registered. So even if they're there, they're actually registered and able to operate. So we don't allow inoperable vehicles to be stored in the driveway. only operable vehicles are registered and can move still could be there. So even though they're stored, they're technically, they could drive right. anywhere. So it's similar to like a regular car. It could be there forever or it could drive as long as you're registering it. So those are some of the issues that we'll be addressing.
It's a good discussion.
All right. Anything else, commissioners?
No.
All right. Well, let's see. As far as recommended action, we've gotten the staff report and public testimony, and we've attempted to provide a lot of feedback. And I guess that concludes that item. And that would move us to Roman numeral number 3, executive officer update.
My update would be really just to wish you a happy new year. And we do have a couple projects that we anticipate coming through this year, some that will bring a crowd and some we don't anticipate any issues. But
nothing in the third district, though, right?
Yeah. but we are eager to get the orange to green zoning code update pushed up to the board and letting them chew on it for a while. So hopefully over the next planning commission or two or February, whenever our time frame is, to bring the document back.
Probably closer to April or March.
April, March, because of the small cell.
Yeah, so there's one more update for the small cell ordinance from the FCC. So we're going to wait for that update to add into it, too.
Wasn't it our goal to get it done by the end of last year at one time? I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Correct? Then obviously
the scope kept growing, and we got new federal regulations. So we're going to throw it all in one bucket now. Yeah.
I thought that was responsibility of chairman for last year.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I failed, so we nominated the chairman.
No, I don't want that responsibility.
So, yeah, Richard's right. We do have a small cell FCC rule that is getting introduced into our orange screen update, so that'll be presented to you at the upcoming meetings. So other than that, I don't have any new updates.
All right, thank you. County Council update.
Yes, just briefly, within the right before the holidays, we were in court on the Esperanza Hills litigation, and we were seeking to have the writ of mandate that was issued against the county regarding our EIR from the 2015 approvals, whether or not we appropriately fixed that according to a court of appeal decision, and the trial court ruled that we did. So the writ was discharged. As you know, I've updated you periodically, but we have another lawsuit, and we have about 4 appeals on that still pending about different issues. I suspect we will have an appeal from the trial court ruling on the discharge, so the petitioners will appeal that. So it's ongoing forever and ever. and I think, yes, that's the only one that's currently being litigated that was in front of all of you. So.
So that project would probably never get built?
I'm pretty sure the project proponent hopes that it will, but...
Wasn't there Red Rock being litigated as well?
Red Rock. Red Rock is... Thank you for reminding me. Red Rock is being litigated, and we are in the middle of responding to the petition for writ of mandate, the brief. So our opposition from the county is due next week, and we have a hearing in March.
Okay. We'll move to Roman numeral number 5, Planning Commissioner comments on any other issues.
I don't have any.
Hearing none. Public comments on items not on the agenda and for which we cannot take any action. None. All right. And then that moves us to number 7. We are adjourned. Thank you.